Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Let's go straight to our Oireachtas studio, where I'm joined by Tánaiste Simon Harris. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
I heard you there in the news bulletin on your way in this morning saying that Donald Trump has had his big bang moment. Are you suggesting that this might not go ahead, these tariffs on the 9th of April, that there might be some wiggle room here, that he has had that big moment in the Rose Garden?
I suppose what I'm suggesting is it was very clear, particularly in recent days, and very clear in my engagement with the US administration and with the European Commission, that President Trump was determined to have the moment last night, the moment of what I describe as a moment of chaos, where he would outline a very significant tariff regime on the world. But that once that moment came, economic gravity and the laws of economic gravity would have to kick in, and that there would be a need for mature, calm negotiation on a way forward. And in what was a very grim and dark moment for global trade last night, I think the only slight, tiny glimmer of hope in that difficult situation was even an acknowledgement from the US president himself that there was now scope for negotiation and engagement, and that's what needs to happen.
So listen, you said mature, calm negotiation, and I'm just really interested to hear about your phone call with the US Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick. You said that there was an exchange of views. That was the official line that came out of that meeting. What was he like on that call? Because he reckons we're operating a scam here.
He certainly didn't use any of that language in the call with me. He was engaging. He was willing to talk things through. He certainly said to me on that call, and I want to be respectful of the call, but he certainly said to me that the sequencing was likely to be that President Trump was determined to bring about the, let's call them the EU-wide tariffs, that what we saw last night, effectively, but that also the president did wish to take action on five specific sectors: on steel and aluminium, where he's already taken action, on cars, where he's taken action, but also on semiconductors, on lumber, and on pharma. And I made the point to the secretary that, well, to two things, really. One, I asked him, would there be time for proper substantive discussion between the European Union and the United States on the issue of pharma, because I believe it's much more complex than is first alluded to. And then secondly, I made the point that a lot of what we produce in companies based in Ireland aren't actually finished products. They're commodities that go back into US factories, I think about 80%, Claire, and that actually there's added value made in US factories. And we agreed to keep in touch. But he did tell me, in fairness to him, he did tell me that it was likely that there would be a lag time, for want of a better phrase, between the general announcement yesterday and some sector specific announcements. Okay. And I now intend to use that time at an EU level on the issue of pharma.
That's really important for us to know, because people were relieved when they heard that pharma wasn't on the list. But you're in no doubt, having had that conversation with Howard Lutnick, that measures are coming.
Oh, I believe in being very honest and very upfront with people in relation to this. President Trump is very clear of the five sectors that he wants to take measures in, and pharma is one of those five sectors. But there is a but, and it's an important one. There is now time to continue to engage. And there's a lot of discussion in Ireland, and perhaps even a lot of discussion in the US, that nearly suggests that Ireland and Ireland alone has a pharma industry. But actually, what I've been doing over recent days and weeks is working with up to a dozen countries in the European Union where there's significant pharma presence, and talking to the EU Trade Commissioner on it. And I was very pleased to see in Ursula von der Leyen's statement this morning that she now will convene a strategic dialogue on pharma next Tuesday. In other words, meeting with big pharma companies, because this is a recognition that Ireland, I think, has been successful in making the point at a European level that pharma is not just about the Irish economy. It actually has a very significant impact on the European economy.
And do you understand why pharma was left off the list last night?
My sense of it is that there's a sequencing to which they're doing their business, and that they wanted to do the EU-wide tariff measures first. But what I would say is this now, after the what I call the big bang announcements of last night, in any dialogue or negotiation or engagement that the EU gets into with the United States, of course, the issue of pharma will have to be discussed. And I think I think that's a good thing from an Irish perspective. Every day that there aren't tariffs on pharma is a good day. And time is our friend here, because, like I say, the laws of economic gravity have to kick in at some point, because tariffs are a bad idea, not just for Ireland and the EU. They're bad for people who voted for President Trump in terms of the cost to consumers.
Did Mr. Lutnick give you a sense of what might be coming with regard to pharma? Because we heard about non-tariff barriers being a possibility. Or could we see tariffs plus non-tariff barriers? Did he tell you?
No, we didn't discuss that. But I mean, what is now clear this morning is that pharma has been excluded from the broader tariffs announced last night. So perhaps that is somewhat the answer to the question. What could have happened, I suppose, is you could have seen tariffs on pharma last night and then further sector-specific measures. That hasn't arisen, and there's now clarity that pharma products are exempt from the announcement last night. That's quite significant in an Irish context, because we exported about 72 billion euro worth of goods to the United States last year, and around 58 billion of that consisted of pharma, chemicals and medtech products.
Well, that's our problem, isn't it, as far as they're concerned?
It's certainly a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity in the here and now, in the sense that they're not included today, and that does provide time and space. But it's also an opportunity for Ireland, and not just Ireland. You know, I've been talking to my Danish counterpart, my Swedish counterpart, the Dutch counterpart, Maref Sefcovic himself, the trade commissioner, to make the point that global supply chains, patients, the cost of medicine, these are not just economic issues. These are issues about the well-being of patients right across the European Union and the United States. And I think Ursula von der Leyen's decision now, which is something Ireland has been advocating for, to have that strategic dialogue on pharma and other sectors, is important.
So look, just looking at what we can do now, we've signed up to the OECD's minimum 15% corporation tax rate, the Pillar 2 rule. So we've done that. But are we speaking to our EU colleagues about lowering the rate to take account of our current situation and how vulnerable we are here? Is that lever open and available to us?
No, that's not the space that the European Union is in here. I mean, I think if I can just take, do you mind if I just take a tiny step back? Because I think a lot has happened in the last couple of days. If you think about it, the European Union has now seen three announcements by President Trump that have affected the European economy. We've had the announcement on steel and aluminium. That's a hit of about 25 billion in tariffs. We've had the announcement on cars. That's a hit of around 75, 76 billion. We had the announcement last night that's not yet quantified, but could be a hit of hundreds of billions. And during all of those times, in fairness to the EU, of which we're proudly a part, I think we've shown remarkable restraint. We've constantly talked about negotiation. And even this morning, the position of the European Union and Ireland is that we now want to negotiate. So what we want to do is this. We want to say to Donald Trump and his administration, come and talk to us. But if there isn't a willingness to negotiate, and I hope and expect there is, well, then Europe obviously does have options in at its disposal and has been preparing those list of retaliatory tariffs too. We don't want to get to that point, but we do have to negotiate from a position of strength. And that's where the European effort has been to date.
Well, you see, the problem for us on tariffs is, you know, the big tech problem. And if tariffs come in that sector, that's a huge problem for Ireland, isn't it?
Yes, but again, not just Ireland. I think we have to be very conscious in having this conversation that we're not isolated. I think there's sometimes sometimes maybe people are looking at this through the Brexit prism as though this is Brexit all over again. Tariffs impact every single European capital. And I'm so clear on that, Claire, from the countless conversations and meetings I've had.
Yeah.
And different countries are impacted in different ways. If you're Slovakia or Germany, the biggest impact so far is on the car industry. If you're in Italy or France, you're very worried about the impact on the drinks industry, as indeed we are here in Ireland. So the different countries will be impacted in different ways by different measures. And that makes it all the more important that we stick together.
The reason I raise our corporation tax rate is we're trying to find something here to keep these big multinationals in Ireland. And if it becomes very financially unattractive for them to be here, then why would they stay?
Because, as I always say, they're not here for the weather. And to be honest, they're not even here for the corporation tax. They're here for the access to the European market. So let's take pharma as one example, but take any sector. But if you take pharma as an example, the US companies here are exporting, or they're not exporting because they're in the EU, but they're producing about 60% of their products for the European market. If they went back to the United States tomorrow, that access to the European market isn't unimpeded. So actually, they're here because We can provide them with talented, skilled workforce. We have a stable political and business environment. They know us for decades, and that matters. That matters. They're well established right across the country. But they're also here because they've access to 450 million people. And you wouldn't think it when you hear the press conferences in the United States. But the EU economy, in terms of the number of people, is much larger than the US economy as well. So we do have strengths here. We do have opportunities here to engage. And I think now that we have the, like I say, the Big Bang announcement, it's time to get down to the granular detail. What can we actually do that is good for the US and good for the EU? And we've been very clear on this. We're open as a European Union to look at how we remove trade barriers. We're open to reform global trading rules. But what we think is pretty darn stupid from an economic point of view is to just get into a protectionist point of view of hiking up taxes, hiking up tariffs that will do one thing and one thing alone, actually push up the cost of consumer goods.
But his view is that the EU would never have acted to remove those trade barriers without him putting something like this on the table.
Well, that is an interesting perspective for two reasons. One, I think he's wrong. We have consistently said at a European level, we're ready to talk. Please talk before the tariff. You'll have heard us all say talks before tariffs. But the second point is, if that is his view, so be it. He's now made his point. He's made his announcement. Now come and talk. Come and negotiate. Come and engage. And if the purpose of last night was to try and bring about a moment of leverage, the art of the deal, as he refers to, well then let's talk. And I think we'll find out very clearly in the coming days whether there is a willingness. And I do take, let's be balanced, I do take some encouragement this morning, from comments we've heard overnight from the Commerce Secretary, from the Treasury Secretary, about sitting down and engaging. And even in the executive order, the document that President Trump signed last night, there is reference to a willingness to reduce the level of tariffs should there be barriers removed and negotiations mm-hmm. take place. Yeah. So there's an avenue to pursue here.
So Howard Lutnick was on Fox News last night after the announcement, and he gave this example of South Korea not allowing McDonald's to sell American chips, French fries as he called them, in South Korea because South Korea couldn't verify the origin of the potato chips, which he found hilarious. And he said that rule was dropped last week and American chips are on their way to McDonald's in Korea. Like, is that what we're talking about here? That there'll be negotiations on individual products and sectors which give a sop to the US administration and result in these tariffs being either cancelled or reduced?
So I don't want to use the word sop, but I mean, obviously, in any negotiation, both sides will have perspectives, both sides will have views. And I can assure President Trump and the administration, both sides will have grievances. It won't just be a one-way discussion. The relationship from a trading point of view, goods and services between the EU and the US is 1.6 trillion euro. Regardless of your political ideology, regardless of the outcome of elections in the US or any European capital, that is a relationship that is hard to ignore or hard to dismiss. And we're already seeing markets begin to respond in relation to that. So what we do need now is this calm, measured, strategic engagement. And what I want to do now, and what I will be doing throughout this period, is make sure that Ireland is never isolated, that Ireland continues to build coalitions and work with like-minded European countries. And what I'm very struck by, I must say, in the dozens of calls I've had over the last few days, is the level of EU solidarity. We don't want to have an escalatory trade war. Let me be very clear on that. This wasn't our idea. We didn't start it. We don't want it. And we'd like to end it. But if there's a refusal to negotiate, well, then, of course, the EU will have to also consider what tools are within our toolkit and what levers are available to us.
Yeah, we're asking our colleagues in the EU, many of whom never liked our low corporation tax rate, we're asking them now to cooperate on us, with us, and not go at the tech sector when it comes to retaliatory tariffs. Now, how is that message being received?
If you don't mind me saying so, and I say so respectfully, that's just a world apart from the conversations that I've honestly been having. I have to be truthful with you. This is not an Irish specific issue. Of course, we discuss it through the Irish prism. There isn't a European government or a European commissioner who isn't exercised about this and doesn't see the very significant downsides. Even if you take the comments of Prime Minister Meloni, the Italian Prime Minister, probably seen as one of the closest allies, if I can use that word, of President Trump, even her comments overnight in relation to the tariffs. So Ireland is not isolated in relation to this. And on the issue of corporation tax, we should not fall for the trap of talking about our country as though the reforms of the last number of years didn't happen. We worked too hard as a country to bring about those reforms for them to just be ignorantly discounted. We signed up to the OECD minimum effective tax rate. We've worked on the EU anti-tax avoidance directive. So it's not my fault if others don't understand that, but we will continue to work every day to make that case. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tolerate a situation where our country is wrongly described, least of all in our country. Our corporation tax now has been very significantly reformed, and there's many, many, many reasons companies locate here.
Well, it was reformed because we were under huge pressure from our colleagues in Europe and in the OECD to do so. But I do want to ask you about the impact of the EU deciding to use this anti-coercion instrument, which could levy tariffs on services. And we've France this morning coming out and saying that that is something that they are ready and willing to consider. How would that affect tech services sold from Ireland into the US?
So I think that's a minority. I'll answer that directly, but I think that's a minority view at the moment. I think it would be an extraordinarily escalatory measure. In fact, I've heard it described by many counterparts as the nuclear option. It's not something that I think we should be reaching for. Everything we should do at an EU level should be to de-escalate, to be calm and to make progress. And I'm not detecting any sort of majority view in relation to this. But the anti-coercion instrument, it is a legislative framework. It is available to the European Union, and it's there to counteract coercive actions by other countries that threaten our security, our sovereignty, or our values. And yes, of course, it could have impacts on the tech sector. But I think we're very significantly at a remove from that today.
Right. It's just the spokesperson for the French government has been speaking in the last couple of minutes to AFP and says the European Union is ready for a trade war with the United States and plans to attack online services in response to Donald Trump's new tariffs.
So I obviously haven't seen that, but that's not the position of the European Union. I mean, different countries may have different perspectives. The position of the European Union is outlined by the Commission President this morning.
But how damaging would that be for us if that were to be pursued?
I think it would be very damaging, and not just perhaps for the reasons that you alluded to there, but actually for broader reasons, because if you arrived at that point, it would be an escalation. It would be an acceptance of tariffs at a very high level being the norm, and it would be the opposite of all that we need to work for. So the position has to be to negotiate down, to negotiate to a better level. But I am confident that that's where the very significant majority perspective is. Mm-hmm. Of course, and I can understand why countries reference the instruments that are at our disposal should they be required. But we should really work to avoid ever getting to that point.
There's another problem that we have, a border-related problem, because we will have a different tariff regime now in Northern Ireland, which will be at 10%. What problems do you foresee in that regard?
Yeah, this is a real challenge, and that's why I spoke yesterday to the First Minister, the Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland, and to the Economy Minister, and I'll be talking to them very regularly, including before I head to Luxembourg to represent Ireland on Monday at the trade meeting. Obviously, the challenge here, and this does seem like a bit of a throwback to conversations we had in the past where you have two different realities on the island of Ireland. At the moment, there's a 10% tariff, if you like, on UK goods and a 20% tariff on European goods, of which Ireland is a part, and therefore there's a 10% differential. Now, being very honest, there's a lot of work going on in real time to tease through this. In terms of agri-food, for example, my understanding is that if it came to whiskey, you'd fill out the custom form before it goes to the US, so that's quite clear. But if you look at things like dairy, there's huge complexities. You know, stuff that goes out from the north could be listed as coming from the south. You know, you can have things, we've had all these conversations during Brexit, mm-hmm. where something can start in the south and go to the north and back again and the likes. So we need to tease these things through, and being quite frank, it's for the United States who've decided to do this differential to outline their understanding. It doesn't kick in, I should say, the differential until the 9th. At the moment, the 10% comes in on the 5th, and the differential becomes effective on the 9th. So there's a period of days now where you can imagine this is being worked through north, south, east and west.
Six short days. Listen, we'll leave all of that there, but I did want to ask you about Mick O'Dwyer, because we had the news of Mick O'Dwyer's death this morning, Tánaiste, a Kerry legend, a man who had an incredible impact on Gaelic football for many, many decades.
Oh, look, it's with tremendous sadness today that everyone has learned of the passing of a man who truly is one of our greatest GAA icons. And I know he's such a proud Kerry man and his native county of Kerry and All-Ireland medals and the huge pride he brought to that county. But in my own county of Wicklow, we like to claim a little bit of him as well, because he brought us to our most successful football results as well, mm-hmm. as he did many other counties.
Well, so he did it for us in Laois as well.
And in Laois, yep. and Kildare. So we're thinking of him today. But look, I'm thinking of his family, thinking of his close friends, thinking of his GAA family. And of course, want to join with everybody in offering our deepest sympathies. A real sporting giant has left us, and may he rest in peace.
All right, well, thank you, Thánaiste, for being with us this morning. That's Simon Harris. We'll hear more about Mick O'Dwyer after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.